So we had talked about the problem of karbanos on a theological level, right? Hashem is intangible, immortal, never gets hungry. Like, what are you doing when you bring a karban? As well as secondary sort of practical problems of, is this an issue of bal tashlis? Of course, it's not bal tashlis if it's a mitzvah. But why create such a mitzvah that's going to destroy the things that Hashem created? As well as the question of tzar balei chayim, you're causing pain, which again, you know, if you're going to tell me that it's a necessity, and that in general, for most of the karbanos, you simply kill the animal in a way that is quick and relatively painless and so on, so you can mitigate the problem. But fundamentally, there has to be a benefit. There has to be some reason to do this. So we began by giving the funding explanation. We said that the Kohanim needs support, and therefore, that was the, which was it, number four on the sheet. It was reason number six in the Rambaz list from the Talmud Yitzchak. The Kohanim need to have support, and therefore, you bring your karbanos, and the Kohanim get food. They get food, they get the hides from the karbanola. So that's one explanation. No offense. The second is the need to prevent averos. Needing to prevent averos is separate from tshuva issues, but it's the idea of either, as the Rambam put it, there's a financial cost to sinning. So that makes people less likely to sin. Of course, that only works for the karbanos of chet, right? It makes sense for chadlos, asham, even asham talui. It's not going to make sense for a shlamim. It's not going to make sense for a toda. The other explanation within that was that destroying the physical helps a person see his own mortality, and different parts of the animal that are destroyed are corresponding to a person's particular physical excesses. So that was our second class. Our third class was the need to avoid punishment, meaning, one level, kapara. Right? This is one of the reasons that the Rama noted was that when you have shame in front of the Kohanim, that provides an element of kapara. Even though the whole world doesn't know that this person committed an avera, nonetheless, the Kohanim who do the avoda and who eat from the karban know what kind of karban this was. So they know that there was a chet. As well as the idea that we noted from the Talmud Yitzchak, the Akeid, the Rabbeinu Bachaye, Ramban, that there is kapara for deed, speech, and thought with the different aspects of the karban. And the idea, which I actually wrote up for this week's Toronto Torah, because I like the idea a lot, the idea of Ibn Ezra, explained in the Tzavnas Paneach on the Ibn Ezra, and then added to by the Rama, which is that when a person commits an avera, there actually is a decree from the heavens that something must be harmed, and even if you can deflect it from this person, it has to land on something else, which is a very strange idea. I'm used to thinking of chet as sort of Hashem's province, right? And Hashem can do whatever he wants. So if I did tshuva, right? I did my bidui, I did my tshuva, I'm done. So the punishment disappears, and that's it. However, what Ibn Ezra is saying is that doesn't work that way. When Hashem issues a gzerah, something has to get hit. And so what you're doing is you're deflecting it onto the karban instead. The karban's a lightning rod, essentially. Which is an odd, as I said, it's an odd idea. But what I try to explain in the Parsha article in Toronto Torah is it conveys a sense of the real world impact of our spiritual life. It's not something, you know, we tend to think of things in this world as either being in the realm of the real or the realm of the perceived. So in the realm of the real, laws of weather, health, physics, right? You drop the flower pot, it's going to smash on the ground. There is a real world impact that is just the way it is. And then you have things that are perceived. So let's say the laws of government. They're only as real as people make them. If society decides, we've decided we're not doing elections this way anymore, or we're not listening to traffic laws, there's nothing the police and the government can do to stop them. It's solely popular acceptance. And often we tend to view spiritual aspects as sort of part of the perceived. It's sort of this convention. And therefore, Hashem could be mochel, and you know, there are ways to deal with things. Rahman aliba boy, Hashem really cares about what's in my heart. The deeds are just things like that. Ideas like that give it a sense that it isn't substantive. And what Ibn Ezra is saying is it doesn't work that way. Something has to pay. there is going to be a negative result somewhere along the line, and what you're doing is saying, okay, but take the carbon instead. Sort of Sarah Lazarus' scapegoat type of an idea, although Sarah Lazarus isn't really a carbon, but that's its own discussion. Okay, so those were the ideas that we went through last time. The first one that I wanted to talk about, the first area that I wanted to talk about this time, is the need for education. The carbon fills an education function. And then I want to talk a little bit about the mystical side of things and how Kabbalah views Karbanos, also within what the Rama brings, and then bring my own idea at the end. But in terms of the need for education, so the Rambam in Mor Nebuchim is very well known, although generally speaking misunderstood. I brought you in source number 12, from the Rambam in the Mor Nebuchim, which the Rama references as reason number 2 on his list. It's very interesting. Yeah, I told you when I introduced the Taras HaOla that basically Taras HaOla is largely, although not exclusively, a blend of the Zohar and the Mor Nebuchim. That's more or less, those are his two favorite sources. He also likes to quote Rabbeinu Bechaye a lot, the Akedah, the Taltos Yitzchak, make it into this discussion here. So reason number 1 that he brings for Korbanos is the Kuzari, which we didn't get to yet, but we will. And then reason number 2 that he brings is the Rambam. So what's the classic idea from the Rambam about why we have Karbanos? Aside from the point that I mentioned last time, which is less known about the sin coming with a financial cost, and therefore you won't be likely to do it. But what's the most famous idea from the Rambam? To take you from Avodah Zarah. If Hashem would have told the Jews coming out of Mitzrayim that you should stand with your feet together and, you know, say words, they would have no way to associate whatsoever with that type of relationship with Hashem. They need korbanos. What are the obvious holes in that?
Seems to be like a large institution that's like, oh, here's a temporary fix for your Vodazara deficit.
Right, so one problem is you created this very elaborate system for something that's really just a concession to human nature. And not only that, it should be a temporary concession to human nature. Right? I mean, today, Meher Yibana, we get a third base Hamikdash. How many people really will find Karbanos easier to grasp than Tefillah? But the Rambam says explicitly, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, a base Hamikdash will be built, and there will be Karbanos. Even by the Rambam's day, who would have associated with Karbanos? You know, that wasn't our thing.
So would we still be davening 3 times a day and then also be doing Karbanos at the same time?
Right, so davening 3 times a day actually went on in the Beis HaMikdash.
Correct.
Meaning, like Sefer Daniel is the most famous source. Daniel is described as davening, he's in Galus at that point, davening 3 times a day facing Yerushalayim, but he says he did it as he had done beforehand when he was still in Eretz Yisrael. So davening 3 times a day, you didn't have a text of a Shemona Esrei until later. But the idea of davening 3 times a day was already in the Beis HaMikdash, and presumably it would persist.
Sure.
You know, maybe you have to change something else in place of a Simchazena. You know, but look at the Rambam here, number 12. The Torah has told us, this is my translation, that the Egyptians worshipped the constellation of the Lamb, which was why they prohibited slaughtering sheep, and they abhorred herders of sheep. And groups of the Sabaeans, also known as Yemenites, worshipped demons, thought they took the form of goats, and slaughtering cattle was abhorred by most idolaters, and they raised their species in great numbers. And so you find that people from India will not slaughter cattle even today. There you go. And to eradicate these false views, he commanded us to bring only these 3 species, so that the deed that they consider the ultimate rebellion would be used to draw closer to God and would be used to atone for sins. He says it's not only about using the korban system. It's also about slaughtering that which was worshipped and considered sacred by those around us. You're specifically, like, think of Korban Pesach, an Egyptian lamb. That's what you're doing with your system of Karbanos. But one problem with it is, as Jay noted, that makes an awfully large part of the Torah really a concession to human nature. Number 2, we had a second issue, right? What was the second issue that we mentioned? I'm blanking. Oh, wait, what will you do nowadays? Right? Then problem number 3 is, where's the first carbon in the Torah?
Why is that?
Yeah. Cain and Hevel bring carbonos, and Hashem likes Hevel's carbon. right? What's wrong with Cain's carbon is a good topic for another time, but Hevel's carbon is accepted. Hevel is not dealing with, you know, an influence of Avodah Zarah that he needs to defeat. So this is a very difficult answer, but the Rambam knows that. And the Rambam brings other explanations as well. The you know, like the one I mentioned, the economic cost of sin. The Rambam is well aware that this is not your answer to all questions about Karbanos. However, he believes that it is a message of Karbanos. The this weaning from Avodah Zarah is an educational element. The Rama himself, at the end of his list, brings what he calls reason number 13. Although I think it's, there are really more reasons in it than 13. But the Rama himself brings an additional approach, which... What did I do here? There it is, number 13. The Rama's approach is also that it is for the sake of education. But look what he says. Laze Omru... Ki Harabayis Hayatuf Kuf al Tuf Kuf. Right? The Harabayis is 500 Amos by 500 Amos. Neged Ha'olam Bichlalo, parallel to the world as a whole. Shu Malach Tuf Kuf Shana L'Rochbo L'Arko Dainu Tuf Kuf al Tuf Kuf. Because if you could walk the width and length of the world, it would take you 500 years each way, each dimension. What is he talking about? Is that the Gemara in Chagiga that talks about the distance from the earth to Shamayim as a 500-year walk? You can get started. See how you do. And then the idea that's also the width of the land. Generally speaking, we don't take that number so literally.
They're often like 400 by 400.
Exactly, 400 is always a big number. And generally negative. But 500 Amos here, he's just saying, here's a number we have by tradition that it's 500 for this, and it's parallel to the Beis HaMikdash, and he's trying to say, Beis HaMikdash is a microcosm of the world. He says, the world just hangs there in space. It's not supported by anything. It's just Hashem making it there. Ukmo tola eretz al belima, the pasuk in Iyov, that Hashem suspends the world on belima. There's nothing there, right? We use it also in the davening on Rosh Hashanah, tola eretz al belima. Kain amru shayatachas harabayis, keepin chalomi tachtav. He says the same thing is seen in Harabayis, that they are that the Beis HaMikdash itself is supported by domes upon domes. Those are hollowed out areas beneath.
Is that like the renovation?
I think even earlier, meaning the Mishnah in Talmud talks about how you had the pathways down below, they had a washroom down there, and the Kohanim would be able to travel through there if they became Tamei during the night. There's some idea that you had pathways below, and that's, you know, now they dig the tunnels. Right? That's what they're doing.
But I don't know if the technology is so advanced yet. I'm assuming it could be, but isn't there like a radar system that we can see exactly where potentially they could have had hollowed domes?
You could try, but I think the Waqf would probably start a riot before you got there.
But can't you do it from afar? Isn't there some sort of technology?
Not that I know. I mean...
Well, we can just do like a massive ultrasound.
I don't know. I don't know. But that's not really his point, really. His point is to say just parallels between the world and the Beis HaMikdash. And the idea of the Rama is that everything within the Beis HaMikdash is parallel to what goes on in the natural world. And so the Karbanos reflect life and death. The idea of the death of a carbon is to reflect the death of the living things that Hashem created. And the carbonos, the ever sort of ongoing flow of carbonos, demonstrate Hashem's replenishment of the earth. We consume what Hashem gave us, and then He gives us more. So what you're playing out is the idea that, or the belief that, really, that Hashem creates life, and that life, there's a cycle to it, and only Hashem lasts forever. And you're just day by day watching that play out in the Beis HaMikdash. He's very into this idea that you're learning Chidush HaOlam in the Beis HaMikdash. So it's an educational tool, different from the Rambam's educational tool, but also about emuna, about matters of faith, fundamentally.
How does he explain all the types of karbanos?
Yeah, so he has a very long discussion after that. Basically, most of Chelek Beis is on the different types of the karbanos. Like, once he's given you his introduction to all the other views, then he's going to go on at length about his... The last category that he brings, at least the last one that I'm going to reference, is the need for mystical benefits. So I brought you the Akedah, I think. I quote for the Akedah in number 14, where he talks about the idea that you purify the neshama by offering to Hashem that which is physical. You take that which is physical, and you're going to give it as a karban to God. Take a look. He says, "Shechavin mechavin makriv lahakrivas atzmo lifnei Hashem." The person who brings the karban has to think he's bringing himself before God. Ve'heraos mimasim elu kichol elu balei chaim shehem b'madregas hanosei el koach hadiburi hamiyuchad ba'adam ro'oy lahakriv al ha'elokim liyis yasher lefanav b'chol minei avodos ad shisher aseichel zach v'naki. Says you're bringing yourself before God, not a Ramban type of idea, which we talked about last time, where it's, you know, inspires you to do tshuva, but rather you look at the animal as the supporter of the human being. The human being being the medaber, the one who conveys abstract ideas, communicates abstract ideas via speech, and you're saying that the animal represents the physical in the human being. And you're bringing it to God to purify that which is spiritual within you. You follow? This is not the idea of atoning for sin. This applies to all karbanos, whether they're for chet or not. But the idea that you purify that which is spiritual in you by sacrificing the material. And you can't sacrifice your own arm, so you sacrifice the karban instead. But it's saying that I am purifying the spiritual by eliminating the material. Deep idea, dangerous idea, a little bit. But that's one of the mystical frameworks for karbanos. And then you get the Kuzari in number 15, and this is his summary of the idea of the Kuzari. The Kuzari's idea itself is in Mamar Sheni. It is Mamar Sheni. It is paragraph 26 Chavav in the Kuzari, and what he says is that the karban is actually feeding the connection of Hashem with this world. Now, why does Hashem's connection with this world need feeding? He says, well, look at your own body and what you need in order to survive. Why do I need to eat in order for my neshama to remain attached to my body? Right? The neshama is not physical. The body needs to function. The body needs food. So, so take a look. Look at what he has in number 15. He says, "Amar shekvar yimatzei dibuk hashchina elokisim ha'um ha'yisraelis b'emtzulus ha'korbanos ha'nekrovim b'beis ha'mikdash." He says, Hashem sticks to the Jewish nation via the korbanos that are brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Ki inyan shetimtza ha'nefesh ha'sichlisim ha'guf ha'idei ha'mazonos shenizon bo. Just like the soul sticks to the body via the food that supports the body. I don't know why physical food feeds the soul, but we see the benefit. He says, I don't know why it works, but that's how it works. It's really it's a fascinating idea, no? A little.
Could they say that, you know, the soul doesn't need the food, the body needs the food?
Right, so that would have been my answer. Right, would have been that it's not really, and that's really the way I worded it, right? That the soul isn't making use of it, it's the body that's making use of it, and the body needs to function in order for the neshama to be connected to it. But you're really just pushing the question one step further, which is, why does the body need that? Why can't the neshama animate the body? Why, you know, I mean, the whole thing is admittedly strange, but I like it because it's unique. Meaning, it's not your standard way to look at karbanos. And in general, I'm partial to explanations of karbanos that work beyond chatas. We spend so much time on chatas-oriented ones. It's about tshuva, it's about kapara, but there's a whole world of karbanos beyond that. Ibn Ezra has an idea, which the Ramah notes here on L'Reach Nichoach L'Hashem, that also fits this idea. But that's one of the mystical approaches. And then, along the same lines, he brings you an idea from the Zohar in source number 16, where he says, "V'zeu soda karbanos." This is the secret of the karbanos. Kisha karban nikrav ketikuno. When the karban is brought properly, va'olala ratzon amizbacha el amizbacha elyon, and it is brought desirably, as I translated l'ratzon, that's the emphasis in the Torah, is with the korbanos, that to be l'ratzon, lifnei Hashem. Then mikarev akochos ha'elyonim biyachad, it brings the higher forces together, ki ayidei pu'las ha'tzadikim mizdabkim ha'elyonim v'hashefa v'haratzon yored milamala. Via the activities of the tzadikim, the higher forces stick together, they are brought together, and they bring Hashem's desire down to this world. Now, what he's doing here has to be understood within how Kabbalah works in general. So to take, obviously, a very big idea and make it very small for our purposes, the analogy I like to use for the way the Zohar works, looks at the world in general, is halacha gives you, well, if you wanted to know, you came into this room and the room was dark, right? And the question was, how do we get light in this room? What would be the answer I would give you? I'd say, there's a light switch outside in the hallway, you flip the light switch, and there's light in the room. That's like halacha. Halacha says, here's what you do. In the morning, when you get up, you say moda'ani, you wash your hands, you say berachas ha'tahorah, you know, these are the things that you have to do. Whereas, someone else, maybe someone who thinks a little bit in terms of engineering and physics, you walk into this room and says, how do we get light in this room? Says, well, there's a power plant, and it has a transformer, and there are wires here, and there's a thing called alternating current, and there's a thing called direct current, and it comes here, and dot, 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 translates into illuminating these bulbs when you close the circuit, right? That's Kabbalah. What's going on in the wiring behind the walls? It's not what do you do, it's how does that make an impact? The assumption of Kabbalah is that the deeds you perform are not simply a checklist. God said, do this, do this, do this. But rather, they have some kind of an impact on the world as a whole. Every action you perform has an impact. So, for example, just as I taught this on Wednesday in my Beth Emeth class, we were talking about mezuzah. The idea of mezuzah is not simply Hashem said, write these two paragraphs and put them on your doorpost. But rather, it is essentially a sanctification of space. You are inviting, so to speak, Hashem, to your door. And Hashem says, I'm going to come protect you. And so all of these ideas about the protection associated with a mezuzah. It's a whole different way of looking at what happens when you do a mitzvah. And that's what you're seeing here. One of the basic ways that Kabbalah views the effect of your mitzvahs is that Hashem's influence, his shefa, comes down to this world from a purely spiritual realm down to the material realm, and your mitzvos make this world connected to, they strengthen the connection between our world and the mystical realms, and make it possible for that influence to reach this world. That's what your mitzvos do, and korbanos are part of that. That's like a nutshell idea for something that's way deeper than I grasp. But at least something to understand what in the world he's talking about here. So those are the Rama's reasons. The only one that I skipped out of his reasons was within the need for tshuva. He has this idea, which I mentioned very briefly last week. I didn't bring it on the sheet, about burning the Ruach HaTumah on the Mizbeach, and I just didn't even know what he was talking about. I read the words over and over again, and I didn't know what that meant. But other than that, those are the Rama's different reasons. And now, I wanted to take a few minutes just to walk you through my own attempt. It's a much more straightforward and down-to-earth attempt, but I think it's right. I think it's pshat and korbanos. And all of these other ideas are not wrong, God forbid, who am I to say that? But I think that they're adding rather than substituting for this. You go back to the first korban in the Chumash, right? In source number 17. Hevel and Kayin bring their korbanos, right? So where did they get the idea to do that in the first place? Where did they get the idea to bring a korban? How did they know that a korban is a thing?
It was a feeling they had for it.
A feeling of what?
A feeling to they knew that God existed. Their parents told them about it, and so they wanted to relate to the God.
And by bringing plants or animals, which aren't even, he's not even allowed to eat them. I don't know why he's raising sheep.
Yeah,
I guess he wants wool.
But they reciprocate giving. Maybe reciprocate giving.
Right. So there's an element of giving that's going on here. That's really important. Eitan, you were going to say?
I think maybe it was something like a nebuah or something like that.
So they
earliest senses, maybe something just told them, like a voice.
So You could suggest that. My problem will be Iker Chasim and HaSefer. The Torah should have really said, and God said, do this, just like it said, and God said, don't eat from the tree. Right? I would have liked to have had an instruction then. So this, I think, is really, really important. This question of why they bring the carbon. Take a look at number 18, please, which is Ramban.
I mean, in general, of Avodah Zarah, like, even if we could say, now, or even nowadays when people do Avodah Zarah, like, why do they do it? They want to be closer to a higher being.
Right. Well, they create what is essentially a transactional spirituality. Right? I am going to give you this, God, and therefore you give me that. That's the fundamental nature of Avodah Zarah. And, you know, whether that's true for all of the Avodah Zarah, I'm not, you know, going to condemn all people who do things that aren't Judaism and say all of them are looking out for themselves and giving only in order to receive. But it's the fundamental model of, you know, not only Karban, but you could argue Mitzvah. Right? You do this, Laman Yibui Mechem Yimevenechem, right? So that you will receive. We hope to get past that. We hope not to look at it that way. But I agree, it's convergent evolution. Different systems all coming to the same conclusion for how it is that they will associate with God and get what they want. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's two different things, to become close to God and to get what you want, you know, like,
yes.
Two different purposes.
Okay.
But and people can bring, like, just like when they bring different types of korbanos, some people want forgiveness, or some people just want the closeness to Hashem, like in,
right.
Like in Ola, I think.
Right, right. No, and I think that's true. I mean, I'm going to play it out here, because I think that you can see it in the Chumash itself. Ramban just says on this, on why Cain and Hevel bring the korban. He says, "Hevinu ha'anashim ha'ele sod gadol me'hakarbanos v'amenachos." He says, they understood, Cain and Hevel understood, the great secret of karbanos and menachos, and so did Noah. But he doesn't say what the sod is. They grasped whatever it was the secret was. So you look at the second karban. And the second karban is Noah's karban. And I brought you the pasuk in 19, where you find something very striking. After the Mabul, Hashem says, Lo Osif, no longer am I going to curse the land for humanity. They are wicked from their immaturity. No longer will I strike all life as I did. So what changed from pre-Mabul to post-Mabul? Why does Hashem make that statement? That statement is right after Noah brings his carbon. It's right after Noah brings his carbon, before Noah gets drunk. Right? They come out of the boat. Noah brings the carbon. Hashem says this, the deal with the rainbow, and then the drunkenness. So this matters a great deal, because what's the trigger for the Mabul in the first place? Hamas, right? When they take things by force from others, whether it's taking property or whether it's the description of taking the wives, they're taking things from others for themselves. And not only are they taking things from others for themselves, it's the particular kind of taking called Hamas that's different from Gezel. I brought you the Medrash here from Bereishis Rabbah in source number 20. I'm rushing this idea because this is supposed to be a half hour share and we're at 28 minutes. But the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah says the difference between Hamas and Gezel is that Hamas is not worth a pruta. Gezel is worth a pruta. And it tells you about how the people then, they used to take, right? Each person takes less than a pruta is worth and you clean the guy out. So what's really wrong with Hamas? Think about it. What's really wrong with doing that? What makes that uniquely bad?
There's no chance of the person prosecuting you.
That's the way I used to think about it, is exactly Aaron's answer. He can't get anything back from you. But there's something else going on.
I feel like it's like disrespectful. Like, I don't even know if you have to steal from me.
Well, no. What it really is it's theft where you have nothing to gain. There is no benefit to the thief.
Yeah.
What you got was useless. This is such a total selfishness where there's no benefit whatsoever. I am just doing it in order to harm you. I'm going to get my kicks from seeing somebody else suffer. That's what Hamas is about. And now you understand why it's so important that Noah brings a carbon. What Noah has demonstrated is... Someone always has to say that when I talk about this idea. Yes, Shkreve. Yuri Wayotze. But that's the value of Noach bringing the carbon. Because he demonstrates that human beings can learn generosity. Noach has a greater right to those animals that he took off of the boat than any human being had a right to anything in history. If not for Noach being the one who finds favor in Hashem's eyes, everything is destroyed. If not for Noach and him, through him, his family, taking care of them physically on the boat, they're all dead. They're living on a boat. They have no other means of getting support. It's all there because of Noach. He owns those animals. And he says, with his meager supplies, right, this is all he has on earth, I'm going to give some of it to Hashem. And not only that, it's very interesting that he brings it as, I brought you, this is all in, just in the English, because it's from a shear that I gave where I didn't put in the Hebrew sources. But if you see what kind of carbon he brought, what did he bring? No. Mikola Be'ema Tahor, Mikola Ofa Tahor, Vayal Olot, Bamizbeach. He brought burnt offerings on the altar. In other words, nothing for himself. It's all about giving. And that's what Hashem wants human beings to learn. And once human beings demonstrate via Noach that they can learn that, Hashem says, okay, then I'm not going to destroy it again. Because they've shown they can grow. And that's why it becomes so important for Abraham. Hashem explains why he loves Abraham. Ki dati l'man asher yitzavez b'noves b'sarachwa v'shamu derech Hashem, as I wrote number 22, lasos tzedakah u'mishpat, to practice the opposite of chamas, righteousness and justice. That's what Kayan Hevel understood. It's what you already said, you know, a few minutes ago, but I wanted to give it the grounding in these sources. It's the desire to give. They recognize giving as a way to draw closer. And that's what Ramban sees, because Ramban, did I bring it on the sheet? I did not. Maybe I brought it earlier, actually. I thought I brought you Ramban on Vayikra Aleph Tes. I translated part of it in number 10, but I didn't bring this piece of it. But he says the meaning of korban is to draw close. You are giving, and that's how you draw close. That's the whole point of the korban. I brought you the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, number 23. This Shabbos is Haftorah. Yirmiyahu is going to criticize the Jews for bringing their korbanos, and he's going to say to them, Hashem says to you, I never ever told you to bring korbanos. Did I ever tell you on the day you left Egypt to bring korbanos? Which you look at and you think, well, that's nonsense. Actually, you did. What was the korban Pesach? Right? Of course you told us to bring korbanos. What are you talking about? The whole Chumash. But the answer is, as the Rambam explains, Hashem is not saying I never wanted korban. I didn't want the korban to be the end. I wanted the korban to be the means. The end is drawing close. That's what I was looking for. I was looking for it to be a relationship. And that's why the Nevi'im spend so much time criticizing the Jews when they bring an inappropriate, deficient carbon. Going back to Cain's carbon, I think it's Rabbi Jonathan Sachs who has the suggestion, why does Hashem reject Cain's carbon? It's really bizarre. Cain is the first one to bring a carbon. Even if it's not as good as Hevel's, you couldn't accept both. There's only one. It's a binary thing. I can only accept one carbon. I'm going to accept Hevel's because Cain's wasn't as good as Hevel's. So but Jonathan Sachs points out the language. If you go back to, I'm pretty sure it's from him that I saw this. Go back to number 17. It's a subtle difference. Vayave Cain mipri ha'adama min chal Hashem. Cain brought from the fruit of the land a gift for God. Vehevel hevi gamhu mibecharos sono umechel vehen. Hevel also brought from the first of his sheep and their fat. So usually we make a distinction of maybe animal versus plant. This is more expensive, less expensive. But he notes that with Cain it's pri ha'adama. It's what grew from the ground. Not necessarily something he even cultivated. Just something that was growing there. Hevel, it's mibichorot sono. His sheep that he had raised, that he had fed, and therefore it had greater meaning for him. There's a personal investment. It makes the gift more meaningful.
So one was easier to give, one was much more difficult.
And not just ease and difficulty, but investment. How much did you put into it? For Kayin, it's a ritual without the same meaning. With Hevel, it actually has the meaning. I still think it's harsh to get rid of Kayin that way, but I think it's a strong idea, and it fits the theme of Karbanos.
So you're going to send a strong image.
Yeah.
Initially.
Right. I mean, we share food as a way to draw close, right? Shalach Manos yesterday was an example of that. The Rambam writes it about the meals when you're Ola Regel and Simchas Yom Tov. Like, there's so much more to say with that, but that's the idea. Food as a resource is valuable, but becoming too attached to it says that we are animal. And effectively, by giving it away, we become closer to the recipient. That's the core idea. Even though Hashem doesn't need it, right? We become closer to Hashem by trying to give something to Hashem. And that, so to me, that I think is a core idea within Karban, is simply for the human being to exhibit generosity. Not to disagree with any of these, but I think that's sort of bedrock within the concept of Karban. You know, and then these ideas are needed maybe to explain why animals. I mean, the easy answer for why animals is that they're the most expensive thing you could have classically, before you get to an industrial age where you could have a computer. What did you have? That was the most expensive thing you owned. Okay? Thank you very much.